might join the discussion afterwards. So I'll start by trying to give a kind of a minimum definition of dramaturgical work, something that stays as a constant across individual projects and across artistic disciplines. When I talk about disciplines, theater is a visual artist. Also because that question comes back a lot, it's kind of an anxious question about what is dramaturgy. So without an intent of provocation, but I've tried to kind of give a phenomenological description that where I say that dramaturgy consists of looking and talking. So any of other things that dramaturg might do, some body work or bringing in a film, read a book, suggest a text and so on, refer back to these two basic things of looking and talking, which then opens up the field of dramaturgy, could be almost anything. So these two activities can have a set of different qualities through which a more specific approach to dramaturgical practice emerges, such as structuring, questioning, reflecting, problematizing, criticizing, reading, organizing, shaping, sharing, discussing, and so on. And another important aspect that comes into equation is the intuition or aesthetic experience or newness of the experience. And in my view, the configuration of these aspects and how they refer to each other, how they're expressed in each other or how they support each other will give a specific and singular variance of dramaturgical work, its ideology or its politics. But for now, I'll suspend all these qualitative questions and look at what a dramaturge does when doing dramaturgy, but also when does she do it in the frame of the dramaturgical process. So in most processes, just simply put, talking happens at the beginning when the ideas are shared and questioned and reformulated, when collaborators try to find a point from which the studio work and the material work can happen. And in the studio itself, it's a constant forth and back, an alternation of looking and talking. So to kind of go more closer in this activity of looking and talking, I picked three terms that kind of create a detour. And those terms are vision, or it's a sense of vision, the kinesthesia, and the sense of movement, and theory. And I particularly picked vision and theory because they seem to be constant troublemakers when we talk about dramaturgy, due to some preconceptions or misconceptions, but also early kind of activist agendas in the discourse on dramaturgy, often produced by dramaturgs themselves. To kind of try and resist the idea of vision and theoretical discourse that would overpower the experience of dance and trying to make a dance making intellectual by what Jeroen mentioned, shaping or framing the experience. And I'll address each of these notions through the examples of my work with Pedro mostly and some other examples. So just to reframe the work with Pedro, a few important aspects of it. One is that our collaboration happens over a long period of time, so I observe dramaturgy in duration, even though I'll more specifically speak here of the production of a piece. So it started as a conversations between us on his work, and in some ways doing a common production, doing a piece together, contributed to defocusing our dialogue from Pedro and from his work and actually creating that common ground that Jeroen was talking about. So that our dialogue was about a work and not Pedro's designs or his work. Another important issue is that our collaboration happened in the framework of a visual arts school where we had a great deal of trouble actually defending the idea of dramaturgy in relation to the default position of advisors in an art school where the dialogue already happens between the artist and people that follow his work and so on. So it was important in that sense to kind of detach again the notion of dramaturgist was from a specific medium or the idea of theater or theatricality. I'll just describe quickly the process as it went. So it started with Pedro having an idea that he made into drawings and animated drawings, and then we discussed those. And it consisted of kind of a scenographic construction that would evoke a forest that moves forward, or a landscape that repeats and swallows the character that's in it, translating the situation in the sense of alert and anxiety. And this refers back to overall topics of his work, which are catastrophe, alert, and temporality of catastrophe and alert as it's produced by the media. So, working on these initial images, we kind of identified certain problems of representation or what is unclear in this image, how it translates quite literally actually in representing an anxious character. While we weren't interested precisely in kind of representing a pathology of anxiety or of alertness. So then the image went through different transformations. We turned into some readings, Benjamin's text, Storyteller, or Freud's Uncanny. And actually through Pedro's reading of Edgar Allan Poe's stories, he came up with a new image of a man buried under his living room. So I'll show you this. It gives you an idea. And I describe this because it tells something important about the dynamic of the process. Where we start from a hypothetical situation that is kind of sketched out in these drawings and talk and work a lot on a concept. But I insisted a lot that it was my incapacity to kind of imagine what this situation would be material, would give materially, and what kind of experience would it be for the audience. So that intervention of mine somehow disrupted the idea of a process as starting from a hypothesis and development of the concept and having this linear like ascending curve to the materialization of a piece. And so each time we had a different materialization, it created this suspension in a process and kind of forced a reset and reinvestigation of the ideas and the concepts that would emerge from the material. So now I'll go back to the notions I announced. And why do I choose the notion of vision or the visual? And I insist that major part of my work when I'm in the process consists of looking at the material. And that notion of looking in the discourse on dramaturgy in dance mostly carried the dramaturgs carried themselves was dismissed and criticized. It was because it was associated with the dominant gaze, as the eye being an organ that is connected to the idea of a subject of knowledge. And André Lepecki was very influential in this kind of discourse, where he quite famously criticized the eye-brain coordination as being the Western paradigm that relates discursive and rational knowledge with vision. And that can be traced back to Aristotelian theory as contemplating and understanding the world through the eye. And to this, Lepecki and others, Miriam Sanescu, offered the idea of embodied dramaturgy based on proximity, or even Lepecki talks about somatic body of the process, common somatic body. So it's so hard to understand where this anxiety comes from, as vision is indeed the sense that operates at the bigger distance and is the one that contributes the most to the objectivation of the world, or even ourselves. We can see ourselves as being from outside through the vision. But I really question, is the vision itself the problem, or these concepts of vision are the problem? And I'd say it's the latter. Because even in the concepts of embodied dramaturgy, one still looks. So the problem for me is not the act of looking, but this very fallacious definition of the sense, or the senses that is inherited from Aristotle, that we have five isolated senses. And so in that sense that the eye would work on its own. And this vision knowledge paradigm can only hold if we define vision as the imprint of the information on the retina and then subsequent cognitive processing and analysis of that information to create a thought. So luckily in the 20th century there was a great deal of research that has shown that the sense of vision itself is a motricity, it's a movement. And it's inseparable from the postural organization and the sense of balance. And hence in touch as much with other senses or internal senses, the sense of movement and kinesthesia, as with the exterior world, and thus creating a complex sensory system. But of course, when I say this, it's easy then to fall again into the trap of scientific truth and saying, but okay, now vision it's plural, it's synesthetic, and everything is okay, so we can go home, there is no problem, we can go on looking. But I use actually this deconstruction of the idea of separate senses as something that gives me a possibility to think of a dramaturgy as an attitude or multiplying perceptive attitudes. So it's an action, it's a choice actually. And questioning how the perception works or what different perceptive attitudes do we adopt across personal but also cultural histories. So it only brings a set of questions. How are my eyes working? How are they moving? What are they attracted to? Where do I see movement? And beyond the movement of the body. Or if I watch a body move, what moves it and what moves me when I watch it and so on. So it's about multiplying questions. And one example is adopting a focal attitude of vision or a peripheral one. And such attitudes can become themselves dramaturgical concepts. And what comes to mind is a performance that I didn't work with as a dramaturg on it, and I saw it as a performance by Mette Ingvardsen. And the giant city that is organized very much as a complex score that kind of forces the spectator to see through the peripheral vision in order to perceive the multiple connection and the progress of the performance in the space. But there is also the vision or the kinesthetic problem of the performer, and I think that performance is not really addressed, which is a different attitude of one performer, Krista Parkinson, in relation to others, where she seems to be very much in a peripheral attitude of kind of letting the world come to her, while others are in a focal kind of action-prone attitude, let's say. And in similar manner in our work, so on a piece that we made together, Domain of Things and Other History, the motricity of the eye became one of the central concepts, dramaturgical concepts. And we named one of the concepts that we gave to the performance was creating a choreography for the eye of the spectator. That invites the spectator for a cinematic treatment of the visual field, where there is very little actual screen media, but it's in the way the space is devised and the temporality of the space is devised, invites the spectator to focus and the focus, to zoom in and zoom out, and to create narrative and temporal jumps across the field. And so this brings me to kinesthesia, that in many ways is kind of a missing sense in the art history and art aesthetics. And I'd like to say that it costs dance the inscription in the categories of fine arts, because it is by definition plural and defies the metaphysical categories of space and times upon which the Kant divided arts into spatial and temporal arts, and the dance with its mediality is immediately in both. So kinesthesia was discovered in the 19th century, and on, from the onset it was object of two different research, and one consisted of studying the movement receptors in muscles, and the other one studied the inner ear that will later result in the discovery of the vestibular system. So the very discovery of kinesthesia, contributed to the deconstruction of the idea of separate, five separate senses. So how does that concern dramaturgical way, I would say, more than one way? So there is obviously the kinesthesia of dancers, of the ones that move, and that in that sense stays a private sense, so what one feels when they move is always in some sort of decalage of what is given as a visual image. And in that sense, the very classic role of the dramaturg is the exterior eye creates a very important dialogue between the ones who are outside and the ones who are inside of that experience. But it's important also to conceive of that relation not as an overpowering relation of the truth of the experience or the truth of the visual interpretation. That's something that feeds two experiences, really, that feed each other in a dialogue. So the kinesthetic dramaturgy of a performer will inform the reading of the dramaturg and vice versa. And it's just in a parenthesis, when I talk about kinesthesia, I'm really not identifying dance as an art form whose essential medium is movement, and it can be a powerful tool to study the cultural conceptions. And a good example would be to study, for example, Jérôme Spell, Bridget Clunchan, and myself, with the kinesthetic attitudes of the two performers and their cultural dialogue. So to come back to work with Pedro, as you see, he's in this machine in a construction under the living room, and he's kind of suspended like supported. Okay, my computer went to sleep. Sorry. Yeah, so he's supported his hips are supported by the structure, and he kind of levitates. So once this object was constructed, the question was how it moves and what's the relation between the body and the machine. And in that work, my input from the outside was very important, and also in the dialogue with devised different exercises that he could do to kind of produce different kinesthetic attitudes and ways of relating to the machine. So one of the main challenges was that to figure out how this simple relation between the body and the structure organizes the conceptual field and the spatial experience for the spectator. So what we tried first was kind of obvious. It could be defined as a concept of muscular body, where the body would be a dynamo that moves with the power of will, this whole structure. So the body was a machine that moved the machine. And it's at that sense, the awareness of one movement was mostly based on the effort and the resistance of the object to the power of the body. And the vestibular system was being treated mostly as just the information giver where one is in space. Then we tried something along the lines of the energetic body to come to the idea of a vectorial body, where he wouldn't rely on the geometric parameters of the space or his orientation, but more of a kind of imaginary vector that would go through his body. And really rely on the inner sense of balance, and that resulted in the machine becoming eventually the extension of the body. And from the outside, he really completely relied on my feedback and my sensory experience of what was going on. So I would I don't know if you can see, but basically the set is that he's, it looks a bit like a metro tube. So the audience sits along two sides of the structure. So I would go around and change seats and give feedback on how this transpires from different spatial points. And finally, theory, that is not sensory, but I'll describe how we used theoretical readings or how theoretical discussions came to being in the process, or what role theoretical text and theoretical thinking played in this production, and they did in more than one way. So I mentioned that we were reading The Uncanny and The Storyteller, and this helped us to understand what is at stake in the image and introduce more precise concepts that we could work with and that could make the idea relevant to the overall project of Catastrophe and Alert. So we then had notions of trauma as formative element and not as a representation of pathology, haunting as survival of the trauma, and death as passage and not as the end or a punctuation, which came mainly from the storyteller. So this notion of death was materialized or literally presented in a person buried but still moving. But it had to do very much also with the political agenda of redefining the end, be it the end of the world with which we're constantly bombarded in popular culture. And then another interesting reading came in the form of the only fictional writing produced by the sociologist Gabriel Tarde called Underground Man, where he describes the decay, catastrophe, and regeneration scenario of humanity, putting forward, of course, a sociological project to fit a fictional form. Well, this book exceeded our particular themes, but it influenced two important things. One being the dramaturgical process itself, because indeed we engaged in writing our own fictional narrative of that situation, the possibilities of movement and the environment, who this person is, and so on. But basically describing everything that allows this situation of the piece to exist. And importantly, none of that writing made it into the piece. And the piece itself is the only thing that does not figure clearly in the writing with it. And this exercise made us aware of the necessity to think outside the situation, the outside of the situation, the otherness and the location as being part of something larger, the potential community, and we got to the idea of the alignment. There's a lot of little machines actually to move. There's a radio whose antenna starts moving and the lamp flickers and the tele flickers and so on. So we took this kind of childish representation of ghostliness as an idea of alignment, of like physical alignment of forces, like radio tuning, as well as the potential collective being about the search and not destination, as there is really no destination. These tracks don't go anywhere, they come to a wall of light. And these conceptual openings and workings on the kind of vertical scale of this image and the travel that the spectator's eye would do allowed us to keep the completely linear physical situation of the set and create narrative and conceptual openings and layers elsewhere. And to finish, because we're kind of running out of time, another important way of treating text, and not only text, but kind of narrative reflection, that when done in such ways, it's far from framing or even interpreting the work, are the moments of kind of theoretical reflection or philosophizing together or fictionalizing theory that I kind of describe as going off together. And this going off and thinking together gains autonomy in the sense of not explaining every aspect of performance, And as such, it becomes relevant for its own plasticity. It becomes material as much as movement or images are material. Now, of course, this going off can go off too far and twist too much. It can pick up something, an aspect of the work, and turn it into something that it's not, or try interpreting. And there I'll quote or paraphrase Deleuze, who said that philosophy is about twisting concepts, but not twisting them too far is the matter of good taste. And I guess the good taste depends on the dynamic of the process and the empathy and the understanding of collaborators. And finally, close readings is maybe counters what I just said, but I think it's important that the close readings of the texts are important. And it's important in understanding them, in understanding when associations that are being made in the work with philosophical paradigms or cultural paradigms are being made, are illegitimate when they're starting to justify the work. And this is another of the conventional problems with the dramaturgy, not only framing but theoretically justifying the work. In that sense, I'd say that performance making is also a learning process, or as Pedro would put it, understanding the text through failed attempts to match it with the material. And this is where the contextualizing part comes in, as understanding where the work comes from and where text comes from, and thus mapping paradigms and conceptual and historical constellations in which the work operates or with which we operate while we work.
Started the question right away because what intrigues me most is the your talk is the kinesthesia part, because both of you are not dancers but performers, and I've had over the years many discussions with dancers like how much kinesthesia and the idea of kinesthetic empathy plays actually a role in spectator or not. Because most spectators, since they don't have a physical training, they don't have a strong awareness of observing what happens in their body. So in what level can it become a conscious or active element in the performance also? And I would like to know more how you work specifically on this idea of kinesthesia, as you spoke about the energetic body, the muscular body, the pictorial body. To what extent is this representations or concepts, and how do they become indeed a kind of kinesthetic interaction between, say, a performing body and a viewing or experiencing body?
Yeah, well, I think the first part of your question kind of refers to the fundamental lack of understanding or lack of being able to identify or name kinesthetic experiences more than not having them. The question of the empathy is a tricky one, and we still don't know actually how it works. There's attempts to explain it through the mirror neurons and the concepts of emulation, where the brain would emulate the movement while not watching other person's movement, and then it's not quite clear whether you can emulate the movement, only the movement that you already know and experienced, or this simulation can actually produce new experience, new kinesthetic experiences through the movement of the other. So it's still a really open research field, and things are not very clear. For the viewers, kinesthesia happens through vision. So it's visual kinesthesia, that you can have auditory kinesthesia and so on. So these experiences happen. It's certain, the problem is identifying them. So I'm not ready to give in to the idea of not working on it in a very precise and specific way and producing certain corporate, bodily experiences or body work or performance based on the fact or the fear that the audience won't recognize it. It's, yeah, it's almost a political attitude, I think we have to find, because we lack language for it as well. So I think it's beyond the actual production of the performances that that whole work needs to be done, how to talk about the body and movement through new terminology that should be based on a kinesthetic experience. So that is the answer to the first part, and the second part was how we work specifically.
Yeah, so it's my question. I follow you in this, but then indeed, if the naming and identifying is a difficult part, it's political project, say within society and then within production of discourse.
Wow.
But the naming and identifying is the first step into developing it as a strategy, say a dramaturgical strategy or strategy of making that you can share with the people you're working with in the studio.
Yeah, but that knowledge I do have first because I am a trained dancer, although I don't dance anymore, and I do follow the work and movement analysis that is developed by Marie Bergodin in France, who now works mostly in a clinical environment, but all his work can be used in the aesthetic work. So we devised exercises. I mean, Pedro committed to doing yoga for 3 months, just as a kind of physical exercise, and then we did a series of very simple perceptive exercises approaching the body as a volume or as a skin, for example, and like with eyes closed and relying on a balance, a sense of gravity. So when you close your eyes, the kinesthetic sense, the vestibular system takes over. And making him identify how his posture in relation to the floor changes, how he can feel the air differently on his skin, like very simple perception exercises. Or when I mentioned the difference between the focal and the peripheral attitude, that it's easiest to explain through vision, but it doesn't have anything to do with the peripheral vision, so how far we can see while we look in front of us. It really has to do while you have your eyes open, in kind of conceptual, consciously exercising the attitude where you rely on your vestibular system, and so you kind of get into a slightly disaffected attitude, so you're not in the action mode, and you let the world, so it sounds very symbolic, but it works practically, you let the world come to you. It's based on also phenomenological philosophy, so how are you in the world and where is the border between your body and the world? So do you pierce the space or do you let the space come to you? So he was in a weird position because he was kind of horizontally suspended. So the first option I said was muscular body, so basically using the body energy and the how the joints work in moving the machine, and it gave this very clunky, clunky way of moving the structure that didn't produce any sense of time, really. It kind of cut the idea of motion in space. So it consisted very much in kind of him becoming one with the machine, and he devised that through those exercises, how he is, that is his grasp a voluntary one, or is he kind of accepting the machine coming into his hand?
Pedro, how did you experience this process?
I went with what Boyana is describing, because I was quite interested, I guess not so much in this empathic relationship that you guys are speaking about in terms of the specificity of one of the components or a component in the piece, but because I was quite interested in generating an effective circumstance for the piece as a whole that would allow the audience to navigate it. So in that sense, I was very interested in whatever would contribute to constructing an intensity that could be shared between the piece and the audience that would allow them to basically navigate it and reactivated in that way. What Boyan is describing in the performance proper, like the attitude with the machine and this kind of shift from being, you know, the clunky, lanky guy that I am every day, anyway, and to transform, try to transform that to that other relationship. Not only did it make sense in terms of like a body that resolves time or that builds time, but it also expanded the physicality of the piece to involve the audience and their attention and their investment in the work. And that was something that I was very aware of. And I guess that's how I, that's the angle that I took from it.
Yeah, because basically the whole idea of a cinematic vision of the viewer without making the cinema had to do with creating specific temporalities. So the first part of the piece is him just moving very slowly the structure across the tracks. And I needed to create a sense of tension and complete absorption into that image and its time, so that when other things, and everything is very minimal in terms of like, in terms of amplitude, let's say, it's not minimalistic, it's aesthetic, so that it puts audience in a certain state of awareness that any little event would potentially create the openings or the zoom in or zoom out that we talked about. So it's in that sense that it translated as very concrete to the bodywork and work on perception, and it translated visually into a stretched, very tense time and absorption and image.
In that sense, it was really interesting, actually, the kind of audience we have, because it was a visual arts audience, mostly, especially in the first time. And visual artists were used to understanding things very quickly. We consume the art with like a very different speed. We're not used to, I would say, to like really go with things that take lots of time to develop. We're not really trained in that as much. And this first part, like for a visual artist, was really boring. It was 15 minutes of someone moving really slow, and this is like in the lingo, that's basically what it would translate to. So the challenge was how to have this motion that would serve two purposes. First, to open up to like a perceptual state where people would that people could endure and invest and I don't know, I should say enjoy, like participate in. And also that would allow them to be focused enough so that they would navigate and start making the connections and the reading that are fundamental for the piece, especially in the beginning. And that is the temporal definition that is cut between the top, where there's this living room that basically doesn't change throughout, and the very changing part that is underneath. Because there are actually like two very different stories that just happen to be aligned in the construction. So. And the way of testing it, I guess, with the visual artist was really interesting to see if these things were happening and part of the work was trying that audience out.
Yeah, I would like to talk a bit more about your desire within visual art context to work with a dramaturg. Is it to bring in different notions of, say, time and perception, as you now indicate? Or where does it come from? How did you move into working with a dramaturg?
There's many ways of answering that. It could even be incidental that Boyan is a dramaturg. That one of the answers could be that. We, as a person with a certain knowledge, she has a. We have a very productive dialogue that happened from before the piece, and it was inspiring and suggestive, and it felt productive, and. And yeah, it had to do with like the fact that she has this kind of specific knowledge that is relevant, but it could also just be because there's that reciprocity there. Of course, I mean, this is happening in the context of long-term research and temporality, so discussing motion is fundamental. And the nature of these works calls for also an awareness of like the histories and the theories and the experiences that are present.
negotiations going on to bring an aspect of dramaturgy within also this art research context that you're in. Because in the performing arts, we have a whole credit system that credits all kinds of particular collaborations. I imagine that a lot of visual arts also work in a collaborative manner, but it's always, it goes under the banner of the artist with a group of assistants that remain invisible, though maybe there might be assistants that have a kind of dramaturgical function. So I would be curious like how this notion of dramaturgy is being discussed or negotiated within a visual art context, or what kind of discussions you had.
Well, my experience with performance is very similar. I mean, it's like the authorship is very, I mean, yes, there's collaborations, but it sort of goes down as very much. Well, I guess it's mentioned, you see in the program that there's like the name and then the other names, and in visual arts, the other names are kind of not there at all.
No, but it makes a huge difference because in the performing arts, the function of a dramaturg or a dramaturgy exists also for an audience. They read the program, they think, oh, dramaturgy, even when they don't know what it is at all. Definitely with the term. In
right.
Visual arts, this is not at all the case. It doesn't exist as a word or as a function.
Well, I'd like to either explain the fights he had to have with the administration of the academy. But the important thing is that this piece premiered in the dance festival, in the space of the academy. It was commissioned by October Dance, done in the framework of his 3-year research at the Art Academy. But in the academy, it's difficult to broaden up all the conditions of if you want to do theater, you already have two advisors, and it's just sort of different. So we kind of were oscillating between trying to didactically explain what dramaturgy is, and it doesn't have to do with the medium of theater, but it's an aspect of collaboration or specific technologies, to being almost artsy and saying the more the merrier, multiplying the visions and so on. Yeah. But the piece was credited in a quite conventional performing arts way.
In a way, also it was a silly fight because in art we're very used to the tutorial format and the advisor format and collaborating with theoreticians. It's very common. So as part of the practice, it was a silly fight. It was just because it was like dramaturgy, and but once it was explained, I guess it was accepted. But but you're right that maybe it is completely different when it comes to the piece being done and how like the figure of the dramaturg kind of fits in it. And when it's viewed by a visual artist audience.
No,
just
important distinction obviously with advisors is because it's in a framework of a fellowship in an art academy, so I of course don't have any agenda of the end of this work is being how it's going to be judged and evaluated that his advisors obviously have. So.
Okay, maybe it's a good moment to open up if you have questions or remarks.
Thank you. Just a little anecdote and then a question. And the anecdote is Isaac Julian, the visual artist filmmaker was nominated for the Turner Prize at the Tate Gallery, and one of the pieces shown it was made with the dancer choreographer Javier de Frutos. And then Javier then started talking about, well, we made it together, and that ruined Isaac's chances. Suddenly it problematized it. So that's just another instance where the kind of your only point about there being different conventions within those two different worlds. I thought that this example was showed that. I hadn't realised that quite why that had happened that way. My question was, I was very interested by hearing what you said about vision and yes, that those recognition of the prejudice against seeing within the kind of Western philosophical tradition, and I can't remember who. I've either read something or heard somebody talking recently where they just automatically said, of course I include within seeing the sensing of the physical, and I found that really liberating because of the problem that you outlined. I know that Maika Blaker has written about visuality as something that is learnt. It's not a you don't see naturally, but visuality is learnt. And I just wondered whether, in terms of, again, what you were saying about kinesthesia and that sort of neurological and physiological research that around the 1880s, 1890s, out of which kinesthesia came, I just wondered whether kinesthesia might also be learned, and whether that might get one round the problem of empathy, which I find empathy really problematic.
Yeah, I agree completely that it is a matter of learning, and that I emphasize the importance of placing it into a cultural context. But also in the sense of individual learning and the development of the child and so on. And it's maybe it sounded a little bit mechanical the way I described it here, but it's very much related to a symbolic field, to a psychological field, to a phenomenological field of a person's life. So kinesthesia is not a kind of mechanical, isolated sense from everything else that constructs a person's history.
Perhaps social and political. It's learned socially and politically.
More questions or remarks? If not, then I thank Oyana Bao and Pedro Gomez de Gaña, as well as Julian Rondeau, for sharing your thoughts, and thank you all for listening, and enjoy the rest of the evening.
Susan Foster just published a book on kinesthesia, agricultural phenomenon.